The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Yunkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles principally from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and also from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is about stable angina. It comes from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter from October of 2021. Living better, preventing heart attack. When blood flow to the heart is reduced in a relatively consistent and predictable way, chest discomfort called stable angina can occur. Angina is a general term used to describe a sensation of squeezing, pressure, heaviness, tightness, or discomfort in the chest. It may feel like a vice is squeezing your upper body or a heavy weight is lying on your chest. Some people with severe angina also feel dizzy, fatigued, nauseated, short of breath, and sweaty. These less typical signs and symptoms are more common in people who have diabetes. Stable angina symptoms can make it difficult to do the activities you enjoy. But there are effective ways to manage and improve your symptoms while lowering your risk of complications. Your blood carries oxygen and nutrients that are vital to proper function and survival of heart muscle. Your coronary arteries supply this blood to the heart muscle. But with coronary artery disease, the coronary arteries become clogged with fatty deposits, leaving the arteries narrowed and unable to handle the necessary flow of oxygenated blood. Those fatty deposits, by the way, are called plaques. Stable angina generally occurs in a predictable way. When your body doesn't need as much oxygen, when you're resting, for example, your heart may still be able to function on the reduced amount of blood flow without causing symptoms. However, exertion or physical activity increases the heart's need for blood. With stable angina, narrowed arteries are unable to accommodate that increased amount of blood flow, often at a predictable point, thus causing angina symptoms. The episodes of angina typically last a few minutes. The discomfort may start as you climb stairs, work out at the gym, tend to yard work, or go for a walk. Emotional stress, cold temperatures, heavy meals, and smoking are additional triggers. Chest pain has many potential causes. Some aren't life-threatening, but some may be, such as unstable angina, which can be a precursor to a heart attack. Seek immediate medical care if you have unexplained chest pain or if your symptoms are different from previous episodes. To diagnose stable angina, your healthcare provider will typically start with a physical exam and ask about your symptoms. You'll also be asked about risk factors, including whether you have a family history of heart disease. Testing can help confirm artery narrowing and angina, or perhaps uncover a different problem. One test, an electrocardiogram, which is also called an ECG or EKG, records the heart's electrical signals to look for unusual patterns. Other tests use imaging to determine whether there is narrowing of the vessels or another heart problem, like enlargement. A stress test done on exercise equipment or by using a medication that causes the heart to work harder allows your doctor to see how your heart responds to physical exertion. If you're diagnosed with angina, treatment focuses on two main goals. One is reducing the risk of serious future complications like a heart attack, a stroke, or death. The other is improving your quality of life by reducing angina symptoms. Lifestyle changes to help achieve both of these goals include eliminating all exposure to tobacco, no smoking, chewing tobacco, or long-term exposure to secondhand smoke, as these are all damaging to the interior walls of arteries. Losing weight. In addition to eating a healthy diet and exercising, talk to your healthcare provider about weight loss options. Eating a healthy diet. This means eating minimally processed plant-based foods for most of your diet. Eat a lot of fruit, vegetables, beans, nuts, and whole grains. Seek lean protein sources and minimize animal-based foods and the saturated fat they often contain. Keep portion size under control and avoid large meals. With your doctor's okay, shoot for 150 minutes of moderate intense aerobic exercise every week. Strength training of major muscle groups twice a week is also recommended, as is stretching 3 times a week for 5 to 10 minutes. Angina is often brought on by exertion, and it may be helpful to pace yourself and take breaks. Reducing stress. Pay attention to what causes stress for you and try to address those triggers the best you can. Relaxation techniques like deep breathing or meditation, gentle meditative exercise, or even a massage or hot bath can help. Don't be afraid to talk with your healthcare provider about techniques for managing stress in your life. Finally, you should limit alcohol consumption. No more than 2 drinks a day for men and 1 drink a day for women. There are also medications for angina. Some medications improve symptoms. These include nitrates. These relax and widen your blood vessels, allowing more blood to flow to your heart. Nitrates like nitroglycerin may be taken for angina pain or to prevent it. Calcium channel blockers. These medications relax and widen the blood vessels by affecting the muscle cells in their arterial walls, improving blood flow. Beta blockers. These work by blocking the effect of the hormone epinephrine, also known as adrenaline. As a result, the heart beats more slowly and with less force, helping blood vessels relax and open to improve blood flow. Finally, there's the medication ranolazine, or Ranexa, which is an anti-angina drug that can be used alone or with other medications. Then there are drugs that prevent complications. These include clot prevention therapy. Aspirin or other clot-reducing drugs make it easier for blood flow through narrowed heart arteries and reduce your risk of a heart attack caused by a blood clot. Take aspirin only with your doctor's okay. Blood pressure medication. If you have high blood pressure, diabetes, signs of heart failure, or chronic kidney disease, your doctor will likely prescribe a medication like an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin II receptor blocker, ARB, to lower your blood pressure. Cholesterol medication. Statins work by blocking a substance your body needs to make cholesterol. They may also help your body reabsorb cholesterol that has accumulated in plaques in your artery walls. This can help prevent future blockages. Statins also provide many other beneficial effects for your heart arteries. Lifestyle changes and medications are frequently used to treat stable angina, but medical procedures like angioplasty and stenting to prop open a narrowed artery with a mesh coil or stent or coronary artery bypass surgery also may be used to treat angina if more conservative treatments have failed. Research has suggested that unless you have specific heart problems, like a malfunction in the left ventricle or extensive coronary artery disease, angioplasty and stenting won't reduce your risk of heart attack or death. but it can significantly minimize angina symptoms and improve your quality of life. Next, there's a little section at the bottom of the page that's called At a Glance, Stable versus Unstable Angina. If chest discomfort is a new symptom for you, it's important to immediately seek medical help. This is also true if you've been diagnosed with stable angina and it worsens or changes. It may be a sign that you're having a heart attack. Stable angina is characterized by occurring when your heart works harder, like with exercise. It's predictable, usually with chest pain similar to previous episodes. It lasts a short time, usually 5 minutes or less, and it disappears fairly quickly if you rest or take medication. On the other hand, unstable angina occurs even at rest and can be a precursor to a heart attack. It's unexpected. It's not the usual pattern of pain that you've had in the past. It lasts a long time, maybe 30 minutes, and is usually more severe. And it may not disappear with rest or use of angina medications. Next, there's a short section devoted to Viagra safety. And it says, Sildenafil or Viagra is an oral drug for erectile dysfunction that widens blood vessels in the penis, helping men who are sexually stimulated to get an erection. To take sildenafil safely, you should avoid citrus. Don't take sildenafil with grapefruit or pomelo fruits or their juices. These may interact with the drug. Don't take more than prescribed. This increases the side effect risk. Take sildenafil only once a day. One dose will last about 4 hours. Avoid online scams. Don't order drugs from an online pharmacy that doesn't have a working phone number, offers improbably low prices, or doesn't require a prescription. Never take substances that are labeled herbal or non-prescription sildenafil equivalent. Be wary with certain conditions. Sildenafil might be dangerous if you're taking a nitroglycerin product like Nitrodur, Nitrostat, and others, or isosorbide mononitrate, or isosorbide dinitrate, or Isradil. Also, if you have very low blood pressure, or uncontrolled high blood pressure, or if you have serious liver or kidney problems. You should note any side effects. Common side effects with Viagra include flushing, headache, stuffy nose, and visual changes like a blue tint to vision. These will last only a few hours. Rare but more serious side effects include hearing and vision loss, or an erection that lasts more than 4 hours, and this requires prompt medical care. Always care for your partner. Vaginal penetration can become painful for a female partner, particularly after menopause. If it's painful, consider other forms of intimacy, or seek a healthcare provider. Now here's a useful article that's called Prep for Healthy Eating, a pro guide to stocking your kitchen. It's been a hectic day. Now it's 6 p.m. and you've just walked into the kitchen to figure out what to make for dinner. You're tempted to order takeout, but you've been trying to save money and eat healthier. Whipping up a meal is always easier if you have a well-stocked fridge, freezer, and pantry. If you're aiming for delicious and nutritious meals, what should you keep in stock? The Mayo Clinic Health Letter spoke to two Mayo Clinic experts, Jen Welper, Wellness Executive Chef, and Catherine Zaratsky, a registered dietitian, to get their ideas and recommendations for stocking the kitchen. Here are their must-haves. Welper, who's the executive chef, says, "Squash, talk about versatile. Chop it up, roast it on a baking sheet with some seasoning. Throw it in a stir fry. Skewer summer squash for kebabs on the grill, or put it in your breakfast frittata. Puree butternut squash for a soup. Bake zucchini into a bread. Use spaghetti squash as a noodle substitute. You can season squash sweetly with cinnamon and a bit of brown sugar, or make it savory with garlic or cayenne. Summer and winter, squash is in season. Squash can provide nutrients like vitamins, fiber, and potassium. Plus, winter squash like butternut, acorn, and spaghetti squash doesn't have to be refrigerated and can have a shelf life of up to several months. It's the perfect pantry staple." Zaratsky, the registered dietitian, suggests canned tomatoes. With this and a few basics like seasonings and olive oil, you can quickly make tomato soup or pasta sauce. Zaratsky also keeps canned tomatoes in the pantry as a way to add nutritious servings to meals. You can add canned tomatoes to chili, many kinds of soup, casseroles, pastas, or pre-made pasta sauce. Adding healthy, no-salt-added canned foods like tomatoes or beans is a great way to boost nutrition in frozen or boxed prepared foods. If I just add all these ingredients plus some fresh or frozen veggies, I went from 3 servings to 6. I've diluted out the salt. It's still flavorful, it's just not overly salty. What about what you should have in the fridge? Welper says, flavorful cheese. Cheese can contain high amounts of saturated fat and calories, but it can be used in a long list of dishes like pasta, salads, and sandwiches. And if you have a cheese with a strong taste, you don't need to use as much. You can enjoy good flavor with less fat and fewer calories. A small serving of cheese includes some calcium, which many Americans need more of in their diets. And a little cheese may make healthy foods like vegetables even more delicious. Welper recommends having both soft and hard cheese. For hard cheese, get a dry, pungent cheese like Pecorino Romano. An aged cheese like Parmesan can add the savory flavor of umami to pasta and salads. For soft cheeses, try a low-fat ricotta, a feta, or goat cheese. If you aren't a fan of those soft cheeses, still aim for maximum flavor with an extra sharp cheddar or pepper jack. Zaratsky recommends that you have lettuce in your refrigerator. Lettuce is a blank slate, Zaratsky says. It's a perfect crispy base for cleaning out the fridge dinner night. Throw on some rinsed canned beans or leftover lentils, fish, chicken, or taco meat. Cover with whatever vegetables you have handy and top with a small amount of a grated, flavorful cheese. Choose whatever lettuces you like, romaine, iceberg, arugula, or prepackaged mixes. You may think you should stay away from iceberg lettuce because it contains a lot of water and doesn't have as many nutrients as do darker, leafy green options. But the light, crispy, and mild flavor of iceberg lettuce is an option, Zaratsky says. Many people don't drink enough water, and if iceberg lettuce provides a little more fluid, if it fills you up and helps you control your hunger, it's a win for a lot of people. But if you're looking for a lettuce with a few more nutrients that still tastes fairly mild, go for romaine, which is sturdy enough to work as a bread-free substitute for taco fixings, Asian lettuce wraps, or even a sandwich. What about the freezer? 2 out of 2 Mayo Clinic experts say get some individually packaged frozen fish fillets, chicken breasts, or vegetarian options like tofu in your freezer. These are a lifesaver when you need to whip up a meal, whether you're cooking for one or six. As far as healthy protein goes, lean chicken breasts and omega-3 rich salmon are great choices. As Zaratsky points out, you don't even need to thaw them. You can just put them in the oven while still frozen. Just plan for a longer baking time. Your goal is to get to a minimum internal temperature of 145 degrees for fish and 165 degrees for chicken. The recommendation is that you eat more fish. And what is easier than that, Zaratsky says, noting that certain fish are also a source of iodine and vitamin D, two nutrients important for thyroid function and bone health. What about the spice rack? Welper and Zaratsky both say you should get fresh herbs and garlic. Skip the dried spice rack whenever it's possible to instead use fresh herbs and garlic. Dried herbs no longer have longer shelf lives, but need to be rehydrated to help them release their maximum flavor. Using garlic and fresh herbs like basil, mint, rosemary, thyme, and sage may help you to cut down on your salt intake and add a lot of taste with few calories. They have such strong flavors, it helps to use those against trying just to add more salt to your diet to get flavor, Welper says. What about a sauce? Both of these experts recommend balsamic vinegar. Vinegar often comes in handy, and balsamic vinegar is a choice that has many possible functions. Not only can you use it to make salad dressings and vinaigrettes, but it also makes a great meat marinade. Mixing balsamic vinegar with olive oil to make a vinaigrette does increase calories, but the olive oil contains a high percentage of healthy fats. And compared with a store-bought salad dressing, a homemade vinaigrette will be far lighter in sodium. Welper suggests cooking a thyme, rosemary, balsamic pork tenderloin, or a tomato garlic balsamic chicken breast. Zaratsky says you can reduce balsamic vinegar over medium-low heat, then use it as a sauce for fish, or even on strawberries for dessert. The next article is entitled News and Our Views. Pre-diabetes in older adults, an unclear risk. Evidence shows that pre-diabetes can be a predictor of whether young or middle-aged adults develop full-blown diabetes in the future. But recent research published in JAMA suggests that it may not be a good yardstick for the older population. Pre-diabetes becomes increasingly common with age. It's a term used to predict who will develop diabetes and is characterized by hemoglobin A1C, or fasting glucose levels that are above the standard range, but not high enough to be considered diabetes. Experts believe that some long-term damage, particularly to the heart, blood vessels, and kidneys, can start in the pre-diabetes stage. The JAMA study looked at more than 3,000 adults with an average age of 75 who didn't have diabetes. Depending on what measurement of blood sugar was used, anywhere from 29 to 73% of study participants met the criteria for prediabetes. But during more than 6 years of follow-up, fewer than 12% of the older adults considered to have prediabetes progressed to diabetes. More typical was a return to standard blood sugar levels. Researchers suggest that in older adults, the focus of diabetes prevention should not necessarily use current definitions of prediabetes or emphasize aggressive treatments. Instead, they recommend focusing on lifestyle changes that promote health and reduce the risk of death. Eating healthy foods, exercising regularly, losing excess weight, quitting smoking, and treating high blood pressure and cholesterol with medications if necessary. Additional research is likely needed before any major changes are made in prediabetes screening. Mayo Clinic follows the American Diabetic Association guidelines recommending annual diabetes screening for adults who meet the criteria for prediabetes. Also in this article, they point out that lung cancer screening guidelines get an update. Lung cancer is the second most common cancer and the leading cause of cancer death in the United States. While the overall survival rate is just over 20%, those diagnosed early have a much higher likelihood of curative treatment. In the past, annual screening for lung cancer is recommended in adults aged 55 to 80 with a 30-pack year smoking history, current smokers, and those who quit within the past 15 years. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force released a new recommendation in March of 2021, and they changed the age range of screening to adults aged 50 to 80 and reduced the number of pack years to 20. This means the screening is now recommended for people who smoked at least one pack a day for 20 years, two packs a day for 10 years, or some other equivalent. These recommendations still apply if you're a current smoker or if you quit within the last 15 years. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it.